Certainly appreciate everyone's attendance here this morning or this evening. Glad you could be here for our visitors also, and we see how some tonight and do appreciate that. I do want to thank Derek for wording that prayer. I asked him to mention me in that prayer and that I present this lesson in a way that the small children would understand. And specifically, it's geared to children. And it's geared to parents of children and raising children. And it's going to deal with some behavioral problems. So I really want the kids to pay attention and try to understand everything I'm saying tonight. Also want to thank Craig for leading that song, Trust and Obey. I think it has a double meaning for us both, for the kids to be an effective, good kid, to be a proper kid, to trust and obey their parents. And for us spiritually, that we lean on God and trust and obey Him. And so that was an appropriate song also. This lesson tonight is both biblical and practical. It's not a normal sermon, but I think it's a Sunday evening appropriate sermon. Time to time, we don't do this often, but I think we need to have some housekeeping. And that'll be one of those top sermons. There'll be some admonitions. There may be some rebuke. But it's something we need to do. It needs to be addressed. I think behavior needs to be addressed. Have you ever gone to your child, or as a child growing up, did your parents ever come to you and say, look, be on your best behavior? The preacher's coming over the house, or the elders are coming over the house, or we're going to visit someone else's house, be on your best behavior. Or we're going to a restaurant, be on your best behavior. Or a more solemn type event where you're going to a funeral, they say, be on your best behavior. We all realize that there's a particular time that that's very appropriate, that we put on that behavior that is our best. Just as we would get dressed and put our best to come to services, that we wrap that respect around us, that we wrap that behavior, and we put that on, and we wear that when we come. We understand that the first thing that should top that list is that when we come to worship God, we should all, and I say all, always, have on our best behavior. And we need to tell our kids that from time to time, but then it should just become a practice. It should be understood. And we should just know that when we come to church, when we come to worship God, when we come before the brethren, that we are on our best behavior. 1 Timothy 3:14 and 15 says, these things I write to you, though I hope to come to you shortly, but if I am delayed, I write to you so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourselves in the house of God, which is the church of the living God and the pillar of the ground of the truth. There is an appropriate behavior here in our assemblies. We need to understand what that is. A warning. Paul's going to give a warning here in a minute that we're going to read. But simply, kids, I ask you tonight, and I plead with you, please stay attuned to the whole sermon. Don't get up to leave to go get a drink of water. Don't get up to go to the bathroom. The sermon is for you tonight. I want you to hear all of it. And that's what it's about. It's about proper behavior. Paul gives a paternal warning. 1 Corinthians 4:14, he says, I do not write these things to shame you, but as my beloved brethren, I warn you. I warn you. I don't say these things to embarrass anyone, but it's a warning. 1 Thessalonians 5:14, never exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, uphold the weak, be patient with all. From time to time, we become unruly. Our children become unruly. And we're warning them. 1 Corinthians 10:12, therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he falls. You may be out in the audience this evening and think, my kids are under control. I don't need this lesson. Take heed lest you fall. You may think you're the parent of the year, but I think there's something in here that we can all learn. There's something for everyone. Order is very important in services also. 1 Corinthians 4:14 or 4:40 says, let all things be done decently and in order. Context here, we're talking about speaking in tongues and all, but I've underlined all things. That's all things be done in decency and order. That's our worship. Let it all be done in that order. Respect. Again, we show respect when we get dressed for service, when we put on our best, when we put on our suits and ties and our nice dresses and our nice shoes, let's also put on that behavioral respect and bring that with us every time we come. In Hebrews 12, 9 and 11, it says, "Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we pay them respect. Shall we not so much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live?" 1 Peter 2, 17, "Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king." The preacher, I'm not the normal preacher here, but when Paul's up here, you should show him respect by not getting up and leaving on him. You should show the song leader respect when he's up here trying to lead public worship, when the people are waiting on the table and leading prayer. We need to honor them. We need to have respect for all. Like you all know, I love kids. I love my kids. I love all your kids. I love to engage kids after services, and I want to hear stories from them. I want them to tell me what they've been doing. I want them to feel better about being here. I want them to feel part of being part of this family. I love them. I love them too much to see us lose them. And that's why we have this lesson tonight. I love them that much that we're going to tackle some tough issues. I understand that we have some children with some special needs. I want you to understand that's not what I'm addressing tonight. I understand that we have kids worthy of praise, and I praise those kids. But I also understand that we have kids that need to be instructed, and parents that need to be instructed, and parents that need to be reminded. The psalmist said in Psalms 119:16, "I will delight myself in my statutes, and I will not forget your law." And I think reminding is helpful for us, and sometimes we do need to be reminded. And I think we do have a problem. And analytically, as I look at a problem, there are three things, or three different scenarios I see that any one of these may contribute to the problem. So I want to stop here and spend a little time and give some illustrations and go through these and see if we can eliminate these one by one. The problem may be that needs clarification. It simply may not have been explained well enough. And that's a possibility. That may not be the possibility here. And after tonight, I hope that we eliminate that. But it may need clarification. Let me illustrate. Both of my sons worked for me this summer. And they would come in at 7 o'clock. And I'm very goal-oriented, production-oriented. And I would line everybody else out before I got to them. You've heard the expression, a dollar waiting on a dime. I would get everybody else moving and going, and then I would get them going. And they would make me nervous. For whatever reason, I just wanted to get them out and working. I felt they needed to be working. So I got a break one morning. I took them both outside the door and stepped out in the front. And I said something like this: "I want y'all to go get that thing over there. Grab this chain and put it on that deal." I was done, turned around, went back in the office. And as I caught a glimpse, I saw them look at each other. And they both just went like this. I knew what I wanted done, but I didn't clarify it. They had no idea what to do. So if that's a problem, if that's a scenario, we want to eliminate that. Another scenario may be that we're not tuned in. Something else is on our mind. We got something else going on. And we're just not tuned in. Another illustration to illustrate that point, I had one time, a couple of years ago, had really wanted some banana plants. So I got online, I looked at the biggest, tallest banana plants they got, and I ordered some 30-footers. I had to do some preparation time. They come in the mail this big. And I ordered them in the winter, they got in the spring. And I won't tell you who, but I had one of my sons go plant them. And we planted them. Well, actually, I planted them. And they started coming up. And they got this, they were about so yay big. And the spring was coming on, it all needed mowed. And so I had a couple acres to mow. So I took the time. Very diligent in doing my research on the plants I wanted and planting them where I wanted them. I took the time to take the sun out and say, mow here, and mow over here, and mow over here. And then when you get right here, I made sure he was beside me. I said, there's one, two, three, here, 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 and pointed out 8 plants. Do you see those plants? Yes, I do. When you get anywhere close to those, I want you to stop. Stop the lawnmower, get the weed eater out, trim them up, make them look nice. Those are my prize plants. I went back in the office and started working. And I check out the window every so often to see how the progress is coming to make sure he wasn't slacking off and he was working. And the mower kept running, and the mower kept running. And I took a break and I looked out the window. And I thought, well, that doesn't look right. And I went out the front door and I looked, I got closer and said, that really doesn't look right. And I have never been, and I'm going to use the word aggravated, but I've never been so aggravated with that child in my life. After me taking all that preparation time and explaining in detail what I wanted and being disappointed and having every one of my plants mowed down, every last one of them. And that's frustrating, very frustrating. To go through the time and effort to explain in detail, there was no details missing in this scenario. The problem was the child didn't want to be doing what he was doing, or there's something on his mind, and he put the headphones on and was listening to music and just getting on down the road. But what I needed to happen didn't happen. And I want to make sure that doesn't happen tonight, that we don't have a failure, that everyone is tuned in and paying attention. In the other scenarios, you simply just may not care. I had a brother that was given a task to go plant some bluebonnets in the garden, and he went out and prepared the ground and mixed the mulch and put the fertilizer in it and did everything. And I've told some of you the story before. But then springtime comes, and my mother says, "Where's the bluebonnets?" He goes. A couple weeks passed, and bluebonnets start sprouting up in our neighbor's yard, and he'd been busted. He went out to make it appear that he was listening, that he cared, but he didn't care. He was angry. So he did some work here, but then threw the fruits off in a different direction. And you know how it goes. You sow what you reap. And then he was shown what happened. So I hope, certainly, that we care, and that's not a problem. I once knew a boy. You know, you've heard the saying, boys will be boys. And I understand that as you're raising children, sometimes boys can be tough. And I understand that sometimes a smaller fraction of the boys are even difficult, more difficult than most. We don't necessarily get to choose who we're given. And sometimes they can be difficult. I want to tell you just a few things about this boy I once knew. You've heard of Dennis the Menace. He was that type. And Mr. Wilson was the one he was always having troubles with. Well, in this boy's life, there was a Mrs. Wilson. And he was such a menace to her, he'd go through a fire garden, tear things up. He was such a menace to her that she would pay the neighborhood kids to come and tell her whenever that young man stepped in her yard. I knew a boy who went to church. And when service was over, he was playing around the back and he threw rocks to the windows. I knew a boy snuck into the communion prep room and drank the fruit of the vine before services started. I knew a boy who played with Hot Wheels and threw them from his seat and hit the people in front of him. I knew a boy that used to hide out in the bushes near the road. And as cars would come down, he would jump out like he was going to dart in front of him and throw his hands up just to hear the tires screech and see the smoke bellow and to see the terrified looks. He got a kick out of that. I once knew a boy who was 3 years old. They snuck outside the house. He got into the car. He threw it into neutral. The car rolled across the driveway, out across the street, and crashed through the neighbor's fence. And all these things were done before this child ever turned 5 years old. And I understand for some of you mothers how difficult this can be. The same child, this mother, day after day, many times the father would come home from work, and this mother would be holding this child in the middle of the floor, crying. Just afraid to let that child go because she didn't know what would happen next. Just exhausted. The father came home one day and asked the child, "Son, didn't you know you're going to spanking for doing this?" And the child replied, "Yes." He said, "Well, if you knew you were going to get a spanking, why did you do it?" And he said something to the effect of, "I'd rather do what I did than get a spanking." So the threat of that didn't necessarily bother him. I say all that to say that A lot of times children can be tests of wills. And children can have very strong wills. Very strong wills. And we need to be able to have wills that are stronger than theirs are to be successful. We have to. We cannot let the child win. Our will has to be stronger. You may ask, were the parents of the little boy successful? Yes, they were. Because they were stronger than the child. They did not give up on the child. They did get discouraged from time to time, but they stayed at it. You have to stay committed, and the work will pay off. We must win. It does take a lot of effort. It may take 18-plus years of effort. But listen closely. A child must submit his will to us, or he will never submit his will to God. We must teach them that. Sometimes we may enlist help. We need to get help from grandparents, from other people around us. Sometimes we're just overwhelmed and we do need a break. We do need help sometimes. We must be consistent. Inconsistency provokes wrath. In Ephesians 6:4 says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath." But if you're spanking them and not telling them why, if they're in trouble and they don't know why, if you do it out of anger, if you do it just when you feel like you're not consistent, you're provoking anger. You must be fair. We had a get-together at people's homes when I was a young boy. And I remember, not all the details, but I remember a 12-year-old girl getting taken in by her father, getting a spanking, the father coming back out in the yard, and we were all playing out in the front. And somebody confessed to what she just got a spanking for. And she says, "I told you I didn't do it." And he said, "Well, that's for next time then." Now, how fair is that? If you make a mistake, admit that you're wrong. Don't think that you're done. You know, I think we reach milestones as we're raising our kids. And for whatever reason, around the fifth grade, we think, our kid's doing pretty good. We've worked hard. We've done a really good job. You're not done. You're not done. If you ease up there, things may continue on well for a year. But things are going to come back up. They're going to start to bite you. And you're going to wish you hadn't laid off. But stay on those kids. You're not done. Don't ease up on or coast on future siblings. If you've done a good job with one and they're out of the house and gone on, don't think you've done your job. You come back to this other 18-year project and you can follow it through. You don't stop. And I think sometimes we have a tendency to think we're done when we're done with one. And we can't do that. That younger child is not worthy, and they haven't earned the trust that the older child has if they have earned that trust. We can't give that to them. They must earn it themselves. Proverbs 26:6 says, "Train up a child in the way she go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." You know, one note there, you do not control who God gave to you. But again, you are in control who you give to God. You can give your children to God's service, and you can control that. I want to talk about some distractions in worship. There are some necessary distractions in worship. I think it's very necessary sometimes that mothers and fathers get kids, small kids, up and take them out and discipline them. It's very necessary. Sometimes it's necessary for medical or health reasons for people to get up and leave. And I applaud parents, and I've seen this recently, and it's very necessary that sometimes a parent will disrupt service themselves to stop a child who is disrupting services. Again, I applaud that. I have seen people tap other people on the shoulder to get their child's attention so that when they look at you, you can give them that look and stop them in their tracks. And I think it'd be very appropriate for someone, if they were sitting on an aisle and saw their children, to come up and to either grab that child and take them out. And kids, I'm talking about you, even at your age. Sometimes we don't act like we should. And it's appropriate sometime that our parents come and stop us. Distractions. I'm an easily distracted person. I sit right up here, my wife Kathy. We sit here ever since the building, the doors have been open. Things catch my eye and distract me easily. And that's one reason I sit up here, so I don't see what goes on back there. But again, I'm a very statistically oriented person. and I had a thought go through my mind as I'm going to camp out on this seat in the back about 2 weeks before I give this sermon, and I'm just going to start checking off marks and say who's going out. And I didn't do that because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But I could have. I could have done that, but I didn't. Again, I don't want to embarrass it, but I'm easily distracted. And sometimes, I've noticed here a couple of weeks ago, I don't know how Paul does it sometimes, but it's distracting for people to get up and go out and walk out on him. But services got started, and two of the children had got up. This was a Sunday morning. Had got up, come back in, got up, and gone out again. Both of these kids had been out twice before Paul had been 10 minutes into a sermon. And that was enough for me to tell me that we do have a problem. It does need to be identified and we need to address it. Now we'll talk about unnecessary distractions in work or in church. Getting a drink. Nobody's going to die. If your kids ask you, tell them no. You know, they prepare ahead of time. They need to go to the restroom. Prepare. We have time before services start. When class is let out, go to the restroom. If something happened and they got up and went to the restroom, the next Sunday, go remind them. What do you tell a child when you're fixing to hop in a car and go on a road trip? Last question you ask them. Should you go to the bathroom? Because I don't want to make any stops. Be prepared. Let's get this stuff taken care of before services start. Singing loudly. Sometimes we have children over the past years come and go. Sometimes a child will just sing loud. And if everyone in the building can hear that child sing, it's too loud. And why does that child sing so loud? I'm not sure, but they're calling attention to themselves, whether intentionally or not, they're doing that. And I don't believe they're showing humility. And we need to teach our children humility. To me, that is distracting. Talking and passing notes. You know, all these things are distracting to other people besides just the people, the person up here preaching. You out there in the audience, you're being distracted. If you're sitting in the back and you stop and look, and somebody gets up and you catch them out of the corner of your eye, you turn 1, 2, 3 seconds, and you're back at the preacher, you've lost something. And if that happens a dozen times, it's just completely unnecessary. Sometimes our kids pass notes. I don't think we should ever let our kids sit behind us, and most of us have our kids in front of us so we can keep an eye on them, and that's a good thing. But sometimes our kids sit on the same row as we do. And our kids are sneaky sometimes, because if they're sitting on the same row with you are, they have you to their left or to their right, and they can be passing their notes and they can be talking with their friends, but they can see you out of the corner of their eye. And it's happening. I can see it from where I'm at from time to time. The kids aren't paying attention, but you're not catching them. So just remember that sometimes. If a kid cannot behave where he's at, he needs to be brought back, he needs to sit with you for a while, and then be given another chance later to go back. Safety concerns. You know, we have kids running in the building before and after services. I'm very concerned about our kids running. You know, I don't want this to sound mean, but I'm not concerned about your kid bumping his head into the pew or bumping his head into the wall when he's running. I'm not concerned about him meeting another kid and they hitting head on. We're just going to hear some screaming and crying and it's going to be over with. These kids are resilient and they're going to heal. I'm concerned about our elderly folks. Somebody is going to get hurt. And it's going to be a serious situation when it happens. And do you want it to be your kid when they knock down one of our elderly people and hurt them? It didn't happen at this building, but it happened at another place where an elderly woman was getting a drink of water in the back. Very similar to our situation where you just turn the corner and the water fountain's there. Two boys were roughhousing, turned the corner, knocked the lady down, broke her hip, and she was out 6 months with a broken hip. We don't want that here. We have to avoid that. the parking lot, running up and down the sidewalks, your kids, again, can be affected or be in the way of the elderly people. They could hurt someone. They could hurt me. You know, they could knock me down and hurt me. I don't heal like I used to. They could hurt you. But you know, it only takes one. We can have this lesson and things may get better for a while, but the first time a kid takes off running, how many follow him? It just starts a stampede. And the kids come up and get to the bathroom. Maybe for a couple weeks, things will be better. What happens the first time a kid goes to the bathroom after this? It opens up the floodgates for everyone else to start doing it again. And it's not right. We need to be in control of our kids. We need to understand that. I am very concerned about the kids out in the parking lot running. And this may not seem like it is a big deal. I'd hate to see a kid get hurt. I hate to see them get seriously injured just as an elderly person getting run over by a kid in the building. A kid getting hit by a car is going to be something that will be just regretful if it ever happened. There are times, and I'm not understating this, there have been people terrorized by backing out and seeing a kid dart in front of them just as they were backing out. And they caught it, or somebody stopped them, or yelled out and stopped it. We've had some close calls. We have people that are even afraid to drive at night because they don't want to back over a child when it gets dark out there. We need to be very concerned for all of these things. Some food for thought. There's some other things. I'll try to go through these really quickly, but I just put some of these in. Being unsupervised. You know, sometimes we come in the building, we left our kids alone, and we've worked on a project, maybe we're going to our class, and maybe this is just a pet peeve for me, but I'm going to call this point the doorman. You know, kids start off doing a good thing by going back out here to the doors and open people up and letting them in. It started out that way. But what it's turned into is a competition to everybody grab a door and see who can throw the door open first. And as soon as you see a car park or somebody get anywhere near close, all the doors go open, and our kids are playing. It's as simple as that. It's turning into competition. We need to be aware of what our kids are doing, and we need to supervise them. If it's done properly, it's fine. They could be edifying if it's done properly, and it's fine. If it's not, it's turning into a game. And the kids throw the doors open, they wrap their arms around the back of it, throw the heels on the door, and ride the door back till it shuts. Our kids need to be supervised. How about sleeping? I went to sleeping services once. I never got up, never went to the bathroom when I was a child. I never got a drink. I went to sleep once. I was 16 years old. I was sitting on the second of the back row where I shouldn't have been. And I don't know why, because I normally sit up here just like these young folks do. I was awakened by my dad picking me up by the arm and removing me across two other young men that were between him and me, and taking me to the back. We went back to the bathroom, washed my face up, woke me up very quickly. I came back in, it never happened again. You know, if our kids are sleeping in church, they're sleeping on Sunday nights, Sunday evenings, did they take a nap? If they're sleeping on Sunday evening, they should have had a nap. Maybe that'll prevent that. As soon as your Johnny asks you, can I go over to somebody else's house at church and spend the afternoon with them? The answer is no if you can't stay awake Sunday evening. If you can, then yes. If you can behave yourself and act responsible, you're growing up, you need to learn not to sleep. Again, we need to prepare, everyone needs to prepare Saturday afternoon for Sunday worship. Get to bed early, be fresh, be prepared. Playing with babies, this is a tough one. I don't have any grandkids yet. There are people out there that do. Now, I know I love babies. I'd be tempted to play with babies. That's why I don't sit in the back, because I'd be making eyes at babies. Lord willing, and some other people willing, maybe I'll be a grandparent one of these days. I give you right now, I'll make this promise to you, and I grant permission to you, if you ever see me playing with my grandbabies, to come and say something to me. Because I don't need to be doing that. keys. Y'all hear that in the back? What do people give their keys to babies to play with? They don't think it makes noise? To me, that's so very distracting. Don't give your key toys to kids that make noise. Don't give them a Tickle Me Elmo. Don't give them keys. It's distracting. There are other things. Maybe you have your pet peeves. I'll let you fill in the blank there. I do want to let deacons know. 1 Timothy 3:12, let the deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children well and their own houses well. That's a prerequisite for being a deacon. If you want to grow, if you want to expand, if you want to be a servant of the kingdom of God, you need to do a good job with your children. Who's doing the training? Sometimes I feel like the children are training the parents, teaching them not to listen. Proverbs 22:6, it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. The next thing I normally hear after I hear that in a sermon is, well, there's always the exception to the rule. I don't see that in my Bible. I don't see that heading. And people are always so willing to go up and to patronize people, to go up to elders and preachers and say, you know, I understand what that says, but you just had one of those kids. Well, you know what? There's an awful lot of those kids running around out there. A lot of them. I think it's just an excuse, and I think it's a cop-out. I'm not saying there's not an exception. I don't know that I've ever met the exception, but there might be some out there. But it is nowhere near as widespread as people want to make it. They want to feel good about it. They want to make themselves feel good, and they want to comfort others. Simply put, if our kids turn out bad, it's our fault. We need to take responsibility. God gave them to us, and let's take responsibility for them. Again, we tell them not to run, and they take off running. And I've seen kids and parents say, stop running. Well, the kid stops running, but what's the next thing they start doing? They start in the power walk mode. As fast as they can possibly go without running. And to me, that's just defiance. Here's a coloring book. Our kids are acting up, and we just give them a coloring book. We take them out, and we take them into this back room back here, and then we put them on the floor, and they start running around and having jolly old time like it's a playground back there. Of course they would rather be back there. You bring them back in here, and they act up again, you're back out there. I think the child is training you. I think we need to pay attention to that. We have them in here in service. We stuff a cookie in their mouth again to be quiet. They finish that and they want another one, so they start making noise again. Are the kids training us or are we training our kids? Everybody knows the 1-2-3 exercise. Johnny, I'm going to count to three. And if you don't stop, 1-2-3, kid don't do anything until the parent makes a move toward him, then the kid runs back. What happened with giving them a warning to say stop and expecting that kid to react the first time you tell them that? The kids, sometimes it feels like they're doing the training. Who can solve the problem? Kids, you can solve the problem. You can do it on your own without your parents' help. If Ephesians 6:1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Colossians 3:20, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Don't get up and go to the bathroom. You won't be a problem. Don't get up to get a drink. You won't be a problem. You can help out. Parents, I guess the easiest way we can help out is not to be hypocritical. We set the proper example to start with, and then we can enforce it in our kids. And everybody's seen these proverb verses, so we're going to go through them. Proverbs 19 and 18, chasten your son while there is hope and do not set his heart on destruction. Train up a child in the way he should go, when he is old he will not depart from it. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. I certainly don't advocate child abuse. The rod and the rebuke give wisdom, but a child left himself brings shame to his mother. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk to them when you sit in your house. And when you walk by the way, and you walk, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. When do we teach our children? Constantly. We don't ever stop teaching our children. We constantly teach our children. Older women. The older woman likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. I don't see anywhere that this is optional. If you're an older woman, you'd instruct the younger women. If the kids aren't behaving properly, you need to teach them to love their children. In doing so, you need to teach them how to properly discipline them. And the converse of that is younger women. Since the older women don't have an option to do this or not, then you don't have an option whether you listen or not. You listen to their advice. Back to the older women. Well, what if I've talked to the younger women and they won't listen to me? I don't see anywhere here where it says try it once or twice and quit. It's a commandment given to older women. It's their job. It's their duty. We keep going. Do we take our child and tell them once or twice to stop or once or twice to listen? Did we give up? We don't do that. It's a continual action. So we need to be committed. It's something that we've been given. Elders, and we urge you, brethren, to recognize who labor among you and over you in the Lord and admonish you. I'm going to skip this next one. It was a lengthy reading. But then all of us can be a part of this. We can all help. All of our deacons have been assigned to watch out for children's safety in the parking lot. If someone grabs your children or grabs your child and is talking to them sternly or rebuking them, don't be angry. Be happy that someone's concerned about your child and they've taken interest in your child and that your child's well-being is in their heart. We had three scenarios. We did have a problem. I think we've made it clear what the problem is. I think everybody has been tuned in. I want to tell you, I did not see a single person get up and leave. And I thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. And I don't think we have anyone that doesn't care. Our wills must be stronger than our child's. We must understand that it's a grave responsibility. Kathy and I went to lunch, and we were getting ready to be seated at a table. And right next to us, many of y'all know Laurel and Heil Colburn. And just they were right there, so we reseated and had lunch with them. It was this week. Michael Walls has been preaching over at the Northside Congregation in Georgetown. A lot of times, Michael's, like I said, he's the preacher in Killeen normally. He was holding the meeting for them. A lot of times Michael sit right back here where the pickets are when we have a meeting week and they have six children. And knowing what the answer was going to be, I said to Heil, how those kids been acting? How are those kids doing? He said, those kids are great. And I knew that before I asked the question. Those kids are very well-behaved kids. And he said to me, if I didn't know better, I wouldn't even know they had voices. Those kids are just so very well behaved, and there's six of them, and they're all young. And it can be done, but it takes effort, and it takes work. And we can train our kids up in the way they can go, the way that God would have us to. And we all need to work hard on that. I think we need to be reminded, and this is what that was. This sermon was to remind us of that. Nothing's been said about prayer in response to the gospel, but I do appreciate your attention. If anyone out there has a need for prayers, we ask that you come forward and that we'll pray for you. If anybody wants to put on the Lord in baptism, we ask you to do so now also as we stand and sing.